are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, October 26, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the 4-5-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Washington editor-at-large at the Atlantic and National Journal, Steve Clemens, on whether we're going to cause the death of millions of people on the Korean Peninsula. Meanwhile, in what will be a ultimately meaningless gesture, Trump to declare an opioid health emergency today. And it turns out that Mark Halperin, not just an a-hole. Meanwhile, more horror stories from ICE, a 10-year-old immigrant with cerebral palsy detained. The budget resolution in the House passes today. Tax cuts are next. And George Herbert Walker Bush apologizes again for another of his gropings. Democrats introduce a state public action, public option act, universal Medicaid buy-in, local news killed by the FCC, Sinclair in talks with Bill O'Reilly, Gary Cohn debased himself and now loses his golden chalice. And lastly, much to the delight of our own Matt Leck, JFK assassination docs to be released today, ladies and gentlemen. All this and more on today's program. I want to start right off with a correction. I mentioned this the other day, but I wanted to mention it again. Got an email. If you haven't listened to the shows from Vegas on Thursday and Friday, do yourself a favor and go check them out. If you want to understand more about how we have this opioid crisis in this country and what are the potential legal actions that are going to be taken and against whom, I would listen to both episodes, Thursday and Friday. Also, if you are stuck with a lot of student debt or with any type of debt and you're getting harassed by debt collectors, you're definitely going to want to listen to Friday's episode because I met a guy who was in a similar situation and he ended up paying off his debts by suing the debt collectors because they just don't pay attention to the law because it's not worth their time. So you're definitely going to want to check out those episodes. But on one of them, I interviewed a lawyer, Mike Berg, from Colorado. And he was involved in litigation dealing with outfits that would approach the families of someone who has just died and give them the opportunity to donate their organs to science. And it turns out they were just basically selling the various body parts to various outlets that wanted them, ranging from the DOD to use these things as basically dummies to different buyers in different parts of the world that find strength through boiling testicles. I have no idea. But a doctor wrote the show and wanted to make sure that we clarified and corrected some of the things said in that interview. He said, This doctor contends that what the lawyer is talking about has nothing to do with signing up to be an organ donor or checking the box on your license. Being an organ donor is different than your family being approached after the fact to donate your body to science. As an organ donor, you are actually donating a specific organ or organs to someone who needs an organ, to a living person. So if you're an organ donor, you're injured, you have no neurologic function, if your brain dead, or perhaps otherwise critically ill with no meaningful chance of recovery, they take you to to surgery. While your heart is still beating, they take the organ, put it on ice, and implant it in another living person who needs that organ. So those are two different things. Want to make sure that's clear. One goes through the United Network of Organ Sharing, and the other is some people who approach your family members if you have passed and basically are looking to get the body parts and claiming they're doing it for science. And it turns out, surprise, surprise, not for science. Also, just a reminder, whether you are a free listener, in particular, if you're a free listener, do us a favor. Go to majoritysurvey.com. Majoritysurvey.com. If you forget the name, it's in the show description. It'll be linked there. Head over to majoritysurvey.com. Obviously, if you watch the show on YouTube right now, or if you are a member, also go to Majority Survey. There are surveys for you there as well. Head there, click on the one that describes you. There are three different surveys. Just click on the link that describes you. The survey is about 4 minutes long. So go there, head over there. Please take the survey. Very helpful. We don't ask any questions that involve who you are or what you, how much you make or what your gender is or any of that. We're not interested in that stuff. I mean, we're interested, but we're not asking. Specifically, we're looking for what you like, what your listening habits are, et cetera, so that we can assess what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we can do in the future. So please help us out, majoritysurvey.com. There's a lot of sound from Donald Trump today. I mean, sorry, but turns out he is the president. At least that's where he's landed. The rest is just sort of watching this whitefish energy that is supposedly, well, not supposedly, they're providing services to Puerto Rico to rebuild their electrical infrastructure in a very dubious manner, and they were dubiously chosen. But let's listen to Donald Trump. Just your daily reminder that there's something very off about this man. This is him bragging about the fact that he went to an Ivy League school. And this is the man of the people, folks. I don't know, when you're president and you feel like you still need to dig down deep to get some credentials that are going to impress people, I think you've got a little bit of a problem that's not going to get wiped away by showing your resume.
Well, I think the press makes me more uncivil.
Pause it for 1 second. The question was, should you be more civil as president of the United States? Continue.
Makes me more uncivil than I am. You know, people don't understand. I went to an Ivy League college. I was a nice student. I did very well. I'm a very intelligent person. The fact is, I think the press creates a different image of Donald Trump than the real person.
Hi, I'm on a hill was a lonely goat herd. Lay, hoodlay, hoodlay, hee-hoo. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd. Lay, hoodlay, hoodaloo.
Ho, ho, lady, hoodley, ho, 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 lady, hoodley.
By my calculations, he went to college 50...
Of a car
50 some odd years ago.
Men on a road put the load to tote her. Lay, lay, men in the midst of a trouble.
He's a real man of the people, folks. Real man of the people. Meanwhile, there was a piece. Where was that from?
There was a better source for this, but one of Trump's professors at business school says he's one of the dumbest students he's ever had.
One of the dumbest. There you go. So.
Actually was the dumbest.
The dumbest. So Donald Trump remembers that he went to an Ivy League school. Obviously, you know, it. Let me tell you something. If your dad is a multimillionaire and you can't get into an Ivy League school, I mean, I don't even know. It must mean that you just have a very bad relationship with your dad. Like an extremely, extremely bad relationship with your dad. Jared Kushner got into Harvard. His dad wasn't as wealthy, I think, as Donald Trump's dad. But yeah, of course. You're bought in. It's not terribly surprising. I can't wait for the Justice Department to sue Harvard to see the records of people who got in because of large donations to the admissions department. I don't think that'll be happening. We will have more Donald Trump stuff that I think probably contradicts the idea that he's a civil human being as the show progresses. But in the meantime, and let me explain to you why we have Steve Clemens on. I may reiterate this to him, but We're looking for, and we've got some suggestions on some experts on North Korea, which I think would be interesting to look into. But in this instance, you know, if we were doing a show on North Korea a year ago, it would be about North Korea. How can we figure North Korea out? But In the era we're living in now, the wild card is not really North Korea. And, you know, I think we did an interview with Heather Hulbert probably close to a year ago now. Maybe it was in December, where she said this, and it really resonated. She said, you know, we're the unpredictable ones now. And nobody has a better sense of what's going on in Washington foreign policy circles than Steve Clemens. And so I want him to either assuage my fears or to give me a justification for drinking too much tonight. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Steve Clemens.
Thank you.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the Washington editor-at-large from the Atlantic Magazine, Steve Clemens. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Sam.
So, Steve, I set this up. I mean, we're living in a very odd time where, you know, for a while I've been planning to get an expert on North Korea, but it seems like maybe a year ago we would have tried to figure out, like, what's going through the collective mind of North Korea. What is their next move? But it seems like we're in an era where, in fact, the United States is really the wild card, that we are the unpredictable ones, and we're the ones who could light this, you know, could basically start the fire.
I mean, sadly, Sam, the United States has become the rogue nation on many fronts. Climate change, you know, dealing with our allies over Russia, how we deal with Iran, and of course North Korea. So much of the world is looking at us as, you know, the element in the equation for global affairs that used to be stable and now has become undependable and reckless. And so this is a problem. And when you add already what was a kind of predictable recklessness of North Korea, I mean, North Korea is not innocent in this issue. The fact is we've managed North Korea and its obstinacy and its extortion antics for decades. And there's no reason why we couldn't have continued to try and find frameworks that kept us from the very harsh binary choices of war or no war that Donald Trump is taking us into. It's unbelievably irresponsible. It's scaring our allies around the world, and it's created a global fragility, not just in Asia, but just about everywhere you look at it in the entire planet is now doubting America's dependability and role in the world.
My sense is that the dynamic specifically with North Korea has gotten increasingly more unstable, I guess, particularly over the past couple of months. And it's starting to reflect itself. I mean, tell me what you are hearing, because I know there was a report, I don't know if it was in the Post or the Times yesterday, the day before, that our chief representative in talks with North Korea has basically said, like, these are breaking down because of what's coming out of Washington.
Well, I think that a couple of things are happening. One, you have an insecure leader in North Korea who's he's worried both at home and abroad, but he's worried about not appearing legitimate, you know, whether he's legitimate or not, we can debate another day, but looking weak in front of his own population. Most foreign policy posturing of this sort, the belligerent and bellicose postures that Donald Trump has taken and that Kim Jong-un has taken, are meant for domestic audiences, less for each other than for domestic audiences where they're trying to throw red meat. But it's created a bellicosity and a, you know, personal, you know, impugning of personal character that has driven this to levels that are very scary, and that many people think it's going to be hard for either Donald Trump or Kim Jong-un to blink in this mess. And of course, we began with a run-up where Donald Trump, in a bizarre way, and I think we talked about this back then, the beginning of his administration, he kept thinking that China was going to somehow save the day for us. And it was a kind of ridiculous framing where it was so clear to me that Donald Trump had no facility and understanding at all of how foreign policy works. And when you do work with countries like China and Russia, which you can, and you know, I remind everybody, they helped us secure the Iran deal. And an Iran deal format, a structure around something like the Iran deal, was probably going to be as about as good as you could get with North Korea, and that you could bring China and Russia both into partnership with Korea, South Korea and Japan and the United States in something with North Korea. But there would be a negotiation. Well, Donald Trump kicked the hell out of the Iran deal. And so I think that, you know, we're in this period right now where North Korea, which again is not innocent, is not abiding by and taking seriously the overtures from Rex Tillerson, is not really interested in regional diplomacy because they think they've got to deal with the crazy man in the White House who's undermining his own diplomats. And so all of the stuff that would normally come along with dealing with a rogue power like North Korea, you have groups, Team B groups, you have journalists who've gone over recently, you have scientists who are occasionally there, you have third-party countries that have talks with North Korea. All of that is collapsing right now because of Donald Trump, not because of North Korea, but because of Donald Trump.
And what's all right? So what's happening in the sort of the consensus in Washington? I saw Joe Cirincione tweeted something the other day that got me a little bit nervous. And it was something to the effect of like he's starting to see the congealing of a desire to go at North Korea in the same way that he saw, you know, in the run up to Iraq. I mean, are you seeing anything like that? Are you starting to see?
Well, we're certainly seeing it around some. One of the myths out there is that Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, and Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, and H.R. McMaster, and John Kelly, basically all generals except Tillerson, are somehow a constraint and a channeler of Donald Trump's will and passions. And I don't buy it. I think at the end of the day, we're seeing lots of times where these men have advised him to take certain steps in the policy front, and he's completely ignored them and gone the opposite direction. And many fear that he's there in North Korea, but to keep his favor, these generals, particularly H.R. McMaster, who I think is, you know, a normally a sound and thoughtful guy, are acquiescing to Donald Trump's position. And even Richard Haass, who's a conservative, head of Council on Foreign Relations, really blasted H.R. McMaster the other day, saying that McMaster let disappear some important policy steps that could have constrained North Korea's next options in further testing both missiles and warheads, and that if you basically come to a deal on stopping testing, you stop progress. And thus, our strategic goals for at least the near to midterm could be met. And in a sense, what Haass was saying is that McMaster is now advocating, you know, a military first, a military only approach to dealing with North Korea, unless North Korea somehow, you know, decides on its own to capitulate and get rid of all of its stuff, which is not going to happen. So we see this kind of happening where the advisors around him are tilting towards Trump's views, perhaps to keep favor with Trump.
Yeah. All right. So this is the question. This is what is sort of haunting me here, right? Because we have Corker come out and you have guys like Tillerson. I mean, here's one theory I have about John Kelly, right? There's only two explanations, and maybe there's a part of each that's true. One is he's a horrible human being, like in the sense that we've seen his policies at ICE, which I find reprehensible. We've seen this guy come out and just sort of blatantly lie about this congresswoman, that's option one, and he was, you know, just not even in control of himself. Option two is he is so concerned about Donald Trump in the White House that he is willing to be as horrible as he needs to be if he thinks it could save millions of lives on the Korean Peninsula. Maybe it's a little bit of both. I mean, I have no idea, but it's hard to sort of come up an option three here, right?
Look, I've spent some time with John Kelly in the past, and I think that, you know, I don't know what all is in his head. I think both are probably a bit true. You know, on one hand, I've talked to Kelly directly about the president's efforts at banning Muslims, the so-called travel ban in the past. You know, that travel ban was written such that, you know, refugees and others trying to escape, you know, certain scenes, you know, had either a 90-day block or a 120-day block, depending on whether they came from certain countries that were on the off list or not. And you know, it implied that the vetting system that the United States had in place was poor. Well, I saw John Kelly at a dinner that went in his honor, and I was able to ask him publicly why DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, which he was running, hadn't in the 90 days that had already lapsed, improved the vetting that the legislation that Trump was trying to push was calling for anyway. Like, what was stopping them? Not the courts. So was the piece really about blocking people coming to the country, or was improving vetting procedures? I happen to have written about this stuff before, and our vetting procedures are outstanding and better than any in the world. So and he responded back, is yes, we've been moving on this and our systems are great. And then he walked up to me privately and said some things off the record to me that I can't reflect on, but they were him trying to sort of say, I get where you're coming from. I'm not really where the president is on this. And yeah, we can do something more sensible. So I think that's been John Kelly's shtick, that he's been out there trying to look like a reasonable, sensible, balanced guy who can bring discipline to policy objectives that may not be Obama's, they can be Trump's, and help kind of save the day and fashion it. And I think it's a power fix for General Kelly to a certain degree. But it at the same time, I think these guys, as we saw with this fallen hero and the really botched effort to kind of convey the condolences of the nation, that he turns a blind eye to the president's incredible failings. We've never had a president this poor at communicating empathy and concern for other Americans. It's all about him 100% of the time. And that is what people around the White House, if they want to continue to be on his good list, look at Gary Cohn. Gary Cohn called him out on some of what happened on the racial issues in Charlottesville. And now Gary Cohn has just been told he will not be what he had been promised before, was to succeed Janet Yellen at the Federal Reserve. Now, whether we like Gary Cohn or don't like Gary Cohn, the fact is, if you cross this president, he will make his people pay. And he's just done that over and over again. So I think that puts the Kellys and McMasters in an interesting position, because a lot of the conventional wisdom is they will abide by their oaths to the Constitution. They will put nation above politics and above Trump and do that. But I don't think it's clear that they will.
Well, I mean, I guess the stakes involved, I mean, look, he's I agree with you in terms of his ability to comfort the mom of a fallen soldier. But the stakes that we're talking about, right? I mean,
are huge.
You know,
millions of people.
The world will recover from his inability to function like a normal human being when it comes to just being able to say, "I'm sorry about the loss of your son who died in," you know, putting aside the sort of the validity of the exercise that he was in. You know, my concern is, like, where is that line? Like, at what point?
Well, we were already past it. I mean, I tweeted something that Dan Glickman, a former Secretary of Agriculture, he was, you know, once during a presidential administration designated as the designated survivor, and the nuclear football followed him, and he wrote a piece in Politico the other day that said that he shouldn't have had that power. No single person should have that power, even though, you know, you anticipate, well, the reason that the president has it and you have this short-term decision-making is in case the United States is an attack and an all-out attack. But Donald Trump is a very different kind of person, and it's making a lot of people question whether this man on his own should have the singular authority to launch nuclear weapons at anyone. And I think we need to rethink that immediately.
Right. But he does, and it doesn't appear that people are. And I guess the question is, is there, you know, look, Lindsey Graham, I saw on television a couple of months ago saying, if there's a war in, if there's a war in the Korean Peninsula, it's not going to really impact us.
Lindsey Graham is wrong. It will create a global depression. It'll create a global collapse of confidence forever in the United States. I mean, people don't understand that what is happening in the world right now, and people may not be familiar with the Suez Crisis in basically 1952-53, but it's essentially when Britain emerged or disappeared as the global power that mattered most in the world, and it just became apparent the United States emerged. And one of these crises is going to be that for the United States, where China rises and it then becomes the kind of global guarantor on climate, global guarantor on market liberalism in the world in a bizarre way, because it's not a liberal country. And you're going to have the United States essentially become much smaller and much less significant. And I don't know where that's going to happen. I just sense that it is coming, because of Donald Trump's leadership and whatnot. Maybe that's, you know, too cosmic for folks to imagine. But we're going into an era where the United States is going to have less leverage and less power than it has traditionally had in decades in the modern era. And as part of that, the kind of ego anxiety of America becoming more diminished is a reckless guy with nuclear weapons. And I think that is very, very worrisome. And, you know, that's
my biggest
concern. We don't
know
whether he's going to use them or not use them. But should he use them, the notion that we are somehow immune and that Lindsey Graham said, hey, it doesn't really matter to us anyway, when you've got Japan, Korea, and basically, you know, 40% of the global economy over there in which we're deeply involved, yes, it will deeply impact the United States.
Well,
deeply, deeply, deeply impact the United States.
Not to mention the millions of lives
lost. Hundreds of thousands
lost.
Of Americans right, right. being killed.
And not even, you know, I mean, Lindsey Graham may not value the life on the Korean Peninsula if they're not American, but I think, you know, most people do. But
right.
I guess my concern is this, and I share your concern, like the vision. I mean, I'm not sure. I think there are arguments about the value of the United States maintaining its the position it's had in the world. But what I'm very concerned about is the idea of a diminished United States where its population presumes the same power, but it's only there now instead of soft power. It ends up having to be just using this big stick that we happen to have. You know, people don't,
right.
people won't
That's right.
respect us in the same way, and we won't be able to do certain things, but we're still going to have this massive club that people are going to be looking to use more, which concerns me. But leaving that aside for a moment, in your estimation,
that's not real power. That's desperate power.
Exactly.
You're not a superpower anymore when you're using military power to throw your weight around the world, and it doesn't earn your trust and respect. You know, the mystique of America's superpower in the world was shattered with the Iraq invasion, in my view. And I think that we're doubling down on that stuff. So,
well, here's the question. Are there more people today? Lindsey Graham may have said that a couple of months ago. Are there more people today and across party lines who are beginning to take the position that, hey, you know what? We got to do something right now. We've got to dislodge them before they get the capacity to deliver a nuclear weapon via missile to California. I mean, are there more people in?
Yes, there are more people who worry that, you know, they believe that the United States cannot allow the nexus, the intersection of North Korea's ability to miniaturize nuclear warheads and install them on long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles, that needs to be preempted at all costs. There's another group of experts, both in Japan, South Korea, the United States, and elsewhere, that said, we've come to a point where we have to get back to classic deterrence, and North Korea is going to have these nuclear weapons, and if they use them, they'll be annihilated, and if they don't, they won't. And get back to the fact that we have to somehow acquiesce to the fact that they're going to have this nuclear capacity, and we're going to have to live with it. And that's where the Jeff Lewis's and other armscontrolwonk.com and others, he's a great analyst, and I think perhaps your Cerencionis and other people are in that spot as well. And then I think that there's another group that says, if we're thinking about either living with North Korea with a bomb or bombing the hell out of North Korea with nuclear weapons, that there's this middle ground of diplomacy, of trying something like the Iran deal, of doing, you know, something that would basically not fully, you know, pay off North Korea for its bad behavior, but you know, frame its situation in a way that Barack Obama got the world together before the Iran deal happened. All of that middle stuff, which James Mattis said is important, that we had lots of room to run on the diplomatic front, Donald Trump is dismantling. That's what's crazy about this, is that the President of the United States is investing zero in trying to make the diplomatic options work. And he's dismantling and undermining his own Secretary of State and other efforts out there that allies or that Europe or that Japan might want to make were not happening. So we're being stuck in a binary choice between live with North Korea with a bomb or bomb them. That's what and that is what Washington, when you ask what is the conventional wisdom, I think D.C. is alarmed at this, but more and more people still remain convinced that you can't allow North Korea to have the capacity to deliver a warhead to the West Coast of the United States.
So is there, are you hearing more people going around saying this is something we got to anticipate?
Yeah. I mean, that is why people who are knowledgeable and thoughtful, regardless of political party, I mean, from Corker to James Brennan, are saying they're seeing the risks of war with North Korea increase dramatically from like 3% or 4% to 25% to 40%. I mean, that's amazing. And that is what is scary right now.
And so, and there's really, I mean, this feels like there's very little that, like, as we, the people listening to this conversation, there's very little that we can do about this at this point.
Well,
I think
there are a couple of things. One, there's an element where there's still doubt that President Trump has the capacity I hate saying these things, but you know, there is this, if President Trump is serious about an overt step towards war with North Korea, then you're going to begin to see things happening. You're going to see the Department of Defense begin to pre-position a lot more material there. And then one step in that direction was what they announced last week, is that he wants, bombers to again be carrying around 24-hour, beyond 24-hour alert. This is something we took years to stop, but he wants to bring bombers back on, fully loaded with nuclear weapons, up 24 hours a day. That's a very bad step. So that's one step that they're taking in the wrong direction. But you would see a lot of other prepositioning of military force in the region, and you'd also begin to see Seoul, Korea empty out. And you would see, when you begin getting towards the real continent, now we haven't seen those things yet, so that's something to be heartened by. But I worry that Donald Trump will use, North Korea is reckless. North Korea does crazy things, and it has been threatening to test a hydrogen bomb over the open ocean in the Pacific. Should that happen, I don't know what Donald Trump will do. And in that situation, he won't have had to pre-position a lot of military support. May just strike him with something and then see where the escalation goes. That's his style. Throw a grenade into something, see how it goes. But in every scenario that we've played out before, a million or more people die in that, because you end up with this escalation with North Korea and South Korea that just decimates Seoul in the very short period of time, no matter what may happen and result in North Korea. So yeah, this is a scary moment. And so when you ask people what they can do, I think it's that, one, we need to all be aware of what's going on. We need members of Congress talking about this publicly and openly, and what the dire consequences. Lindsey Graham is totally wrong, the dire consequences for the United States of this, and have that out there so that at least eyes are wide open in this country, which they're not. And we haven't even talked about what I think is, potentially the real driver of this, is that most of Donald Trump's behavior, whatever it may be on North Korea, on climate, on JFK files being released, is about distracting from the Russia investigation and what Bob Mueller is doing. So here we may trip into a nuclear war, not because of the merits of whether North Korea is becoming a bad actor with, ICBM capacity and nuclear warheads, but because he wants to continually to distract us from other stories going on. That's the age we're in. It's totally insane, and it's very scary.
I'm not convinced he wouldn't be doing the exact same thing with or without the Mueller investigation. I mean,
I disagree totally. I mean, I've been watching. I mean, Donald Trump, at his core, doesn't really care about North Korea. He doesn't really care about nuclear weapons.
Right.
And while he is a pugnacious nationalist, he is a, I mean, I think that he is, to a certain degree, and I know this is controversial, when he was not interested in having a lot of military capacity or activity abroad. He's not, this crusader in global affairs, including on North Korea, and this was clear in his campaign rhetoric. So when he does get engaged in something like, Syria, or wants to take on somebody, threatened military force in Venezuela, of all places, another crazy comment, I actually don't agree with those people that think that he would be doing this if there wasn't something he was trying to distract us from, because he's just not built or designed to think about these issues in any kind of consistent way, and he doesn't have the attention span. He's being driven there because he knows it's a good way. I mean, you know, you can see in the first, you know, 8 or 9 months of his presidency, I was on TV every time North Korea would come up as this pulsating threat of the moment, and then it would disappear for three weeks and nobody would pay attention. Then it would be back again because of another test, and then you know, something that Trump tweeted out, and then it would disappear again. And we think that every time we're on the verge of something going on here, and I do think it's bad, I think he's reckless, we think any of this could happen any moment. And certainly we've convinced the North Koreans that with all of the media that we're getting out of North Korea right now on their willingness to stand by their leader through a tough time expecting war. So in this situation, I think it's a very bad situation, but what is driving us into this train wreck is a leader who wants the train wreck for reasons other than just, you know, correcting North Korea's, you know, nuclear direction.
Let me ask you, and I know you got to run in a minute here, but let me just ask you as a broader question. There's a piece in the New York Times magazine which sort of outlines how, I mean, I think people are well aware that the State Department is completely understaffed, and there seems to be a supplanting of sort of a professional diplomatic corps with now like sort of these series of sort of personal overtures through different business people who have relationships with Donald Trump. I mean, this is sort of indicative of his style and of a sort of an authoritarian style. And it seems like, you know, Rex Tillerson has no problem with him. I mean, are you seeing like a fundamental shift? Not just a degradation of our sort of diplomatic core, but a
totally. I mean,
fundamental...
totally. We do not have the people we need to manage an aftermath of, you know, if we got a shift on the Iran deal, or to manage, you know, the diplomacy and efforts on North Korea and those fronts. And yeah, we're ending up with an old boys network of, you know, people whose interests have congealed over a period of time, and you know, he trusts and works with those folks. But those folks do not have a deep institutional understanding of American national interests or where we are moving. So yeah, no, our diplomatic functions are gutted and weak, and other things are emerging to take over, and that is something that ought to worry all of us.
Steve Clemens, editor-at-large, Atlantic Magazine, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
All right, folks. Going to take a break. Not good, but at least we have some sense of what to keep an eye on in terms of escalation. If there becomes a... if the chances, you know, I think as far as I could tell from what Steve was saying, you know, we're somewhere in the 25% to 40% range. And I imagine if we start seeing those signs of ramp up military presence and some significant evacuations, or, you know, I don't know who the leadership of who to watch in Seoul, South Korea. But I imagine there are some people. Terrifying. Terrifying. And the scary part about this is that the closer we get to a Donald Trump, who is disempowered or kicked out of office, the more the chances of him starting a conflict go up. I mean, I think this is fairly like, this is not multidimensional chess that we need to play here. This feels like checkers. And I'll also say that, like, you know, I've been watching, I don't know what I was watching last night, some cable news a little bit. And there's a lot being made of, you know, Bannon on the outside. What's Bannon trying to do? He's going to ruin the Republican Party. He's going to cause what he's doing doesn't make any sense. He's going to cause them to lose the House, et cetera, et cetera. I don't understand why there is this immediate acceptance of the fact that Bannon has an agenda that is anywhere near wanting to maintain Republican control of the House and Senate. It doesn't even make sense. Why would Bannon care? I think from the perspective of Donald Trump, the best thing that can happen to Donald Trump in terms of his reelection opportunities in 2020, it seems to me, might be not to have control of the House. To have something to run against. Republicans always are at their least effective when they actually have the power to do what they claim they want to do. They're much better when they're complaining about other people stopping them from the stuff that they're going to do, because they really have a very narrow agenda at the end of the day. And we're seeing it in the context of these tax cuts. It's the only thing that can bring them together. But Steve Bannon, I think, in Steve Bannon's fantasy, Donald Trump feels threatened, paranoid, and lobs some missiles somewhere. And all hell breaks loose. I certainly feels like what Steve Bannon would want. Maybe we should go dig back into that Strauss and Howe stuff that he supposedly subscribes to.
Is that the fourth turning?
Yeah. There's no reason to believe that, like, oh, he believed it a year and a half ago. But now that he's getting closer to fulfilling his dream, he's sort of let go of that stuff. He's just more interested in building a Breitbart.
He's just more interested in it intellectually as an experiment, not like something to subscribe to and maybe throw the world into.
Yeah. A year and a half ago, he was hoping for World War III, and now he's just really concerned that Roy Moore gets to the Senate. All right, we're going to take a quick break. A reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. But what's super important, I mean, that's super important, but what's super ooper important right now is that you take the survey at majoritysurvey.com. It'll take you just a minute. If you forget what link it is, I just said it a second ago, but if you don't really listen to me very well, or like my voice just becomes like this drone that you get sick of and you don't even, nothing sticks. It will be in the show description of your podcast. Now, of course, if it's the case that you can't even make out separate words and when I talk, then you won't even know that I said that. But the point is majoritysurvey.com. We need your replies. Also, if you enjoy coffee, and you've never tried justcoffee.coop, you're making a huge mistake. Because with the coupon code majority, you get 10% off toffee, coffee, tea, or chocolate. Fair trade, co-op owned. This is total, this is right, Jamie, this is right up your alley. It's total anarcho-communist coffee. Co-op owned coffee, fair trade.
Sounds good.
Right? So check that out, and not so much up anybody's alley, but if you do buy stuff from Amazon, the very least you can do is skim some off the top and do it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Of course, we are also have a jet.com link there. 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll take your phone calls and IMs. We've got a lot of sound to get through in the fun half.